This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Doe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
In the news this month, formation mechanisms of neutron stars, chaos terrain on Europa, and the invasion of Mars. There are thought to be two main formation mechanisms for the ultra-dense compact stars known as neutron stars, called collapsed supernovae, where massive stars greater than 8 times the mass of the Sun run out of fuel and form a massive iron core, an electron capture supernovae, where a lower mass core, mainly composed of oxygen, neon and magnesium, loses outward pressure supporting it against further collapse due to the sudden capture of electrons by neon or magnesium nuclei. While the explosions caused by these two mechanisms have different characteristics, it has so far been impossible to distinguish between neutron stars formed by these two processes. Now, in a paper published in Nature on November the 17th, Christian Knigge and colleagues have found evidence of two distinct subpopulations of a particular type of binary pulsar. The researchers studied a class of binary system known as BEX binaries, a neutron star orbiting a BE-type star. These BE stars are hot, massive B-type stars on the main sequence, with significant hydrogen emission in their spectra. They rotate very rapidly and are losing material in a surrounding disk of gas. In a binary system with a BE star orbiting a neutron star, this disk material is accreted by the neutron star, resulting in strong X-ray emission. Such systems usually have elliptical orbits with periods between 10 and 1,000 days, and the neutron stars spin rapidly with periods of between 1 and 1,000 seconds. These systems are useful in exploring the formation mechanisms of neutron stars because they provide a well-defined sample where the physical conditions are similar and many of the properties are easily measured. The researchers took a sample of BEX systems from the Milky Way and Magellanic Clouds and studied their properties. What they discovered is that both the spin period of the neutron star and the orbital period of the binary system fall into two groups. The split between long and short period systems is significant in the full sample, and is still significant when the sample is divided by galaxy, showing that the bimodal nature of the distribution is unlikely to be due to a selection effect. The researchers discussed three possibilities for the split in the population. One reason could be that some neutron star spin periods are more stable than others, but this idea looks unlikely since there is a correlation between the spin period and the orbital period. Another possibility is that the orbital period of the binary system may vary over time. In this case, the two subpopulations would represent two distinct, long-lived, stable phases. However, the timescales over which changes would occur in such systems are much longer than the lifetimes of the BE stars involved. The third possibility is that the two classes of BEX system are caused by the two different classes of supernova. While core collapse supernova occur in any star greater than a specific mass, the conditions for an electron capture supernova are far more difficult to achieve, and these conditions are more easily produced in binary systems. There are significant differences in the products of the two different kinds of supernova. Electron capture supernova result in lower mass neutron stars moving at slower velocities than those produced in core collapse supernova. Since the kick velocity will have a significant effect on the eccentricity of the binary orbit, the two different supernova mechanisms could naturally produce two subpopulations of BEX binaries with different orbital parameters. The researchers conclude that core collapse supernova should produce high-mass neutron stars in eccentric orbits, while electron capture supernovae would result in lower-mass neutron stars in more circular orbits. While only a small number of systems currently have well-measured eccentricities, the results so far appear to support this conclusion. Even so, the authors point out that their suggested explanation for the two observed populations is speculative, and there are many further observational and theoretical tests which can be carried out in order to test the hypothesis. Very few places in the solar system are geologically active today. The Earth is one, with the tectonic plates continuously shifting, and Jupiter's moon Io is another, the tidal stresses of its parent planet causing large amounts of volcanic activity. Another of Jupiter's moons also shows signs of significant surface movement. With its surface covered by ice instead of rock, Europa is certainly an unusual place. The icy shell covers a liquid ocean, but the thickness of this ice crust is debated. The Galileo spacecraft showed that Europa's surface includes features known as chaos terrains, quasi-circular regions where the surface is cracked and broken in random patterns, features which are unique to Europa. Some of these chaos terrains, such as the archetypal Connemara chaos, rise above the surrounding surface, and no models so far have been able to entirely explain these features. With a thick ice shell potentially some 10 kilometres deep, the buoyancy of material rising in plumes below the surface is not strong enough to create the observed features. But now, a group of researchers have found a mechanism which can explain these terrains, and which suggests that, at least in some places, the crust is comparatively thin. In a paper published in Nature on November the 24th, a team led by Brittany Schmidt at the University of Texas at Austin describe a model which explains the observed nature of these chaos terrains. While such features have not been found on the Earth, the researchers looked at analogous processes known to occur in terrestrial subglacial volcanoes and ice shelves, and applied these ideas to images of Europa's chaos terrains taken by the Galileo spacecraft a decade ago. Their analysis suggests that these chaos terrains likely form above liquid water lenses, lens-shaped regions of liquid water which are confined under the surface by stresses in the surrounding ice. Similar features are seen in subglacial eruptions in Iceland, although, since the surface ice is finite in this case, the water eventually escapes. The model proposed for Europa is that a rising plume of pure ice starts to melt the salty ice layer above it. As it melts, the volume decreases and the surface collapses, forming a depression and causing fractures, creating rectangular blocks of ice. The fractures then fill with salty water, which eventually refreezes, expanding as it does and raising the resulting chaotic terrain above the surrounding surface. This model explains the raised nature of Connemara chaos, and suggests that the depression seen in another region, known as Terra Macula, a chaos region some 100 kilometres in diameter, is still actively forming over a liquid layer just a few kilometres below the surface. If this is the case, then the next mission to take photographs of Europa should see significant changes in the appearance of Terra Macula. The thickness of the surface ice on Europa is of key importance for future missions to the Moon to search for life in the subsurface ocean, since any such mission will need to drill through this layer. This research suggests that, at least in places, the ice may be relatively thin. And finally, November saw the launch of two separate missions to Mars. The first, Phobos Grunt, was launched from Baikonur in Kazakhstan at 16 minutes past midnight Moscow time on November the 9th. The Russian spacecraft, designed to collect samples from Mars's moon Phobos, has been 20 years in the making, and was also carrying China's first Mars satellite, Yinga 1. Phobos Grunt itself was an ambitious mission designed to return samples of the surface of the 27-kilometre diameter satellite and return them to the Earth, giving planetary scientists around the world a unique means of investigating its origin. Early telemetry received from the Russian craft showed a flawless launch and entry into the correct parking orbit. However, two orbits later, when the craft was supposed to have fired its main engine to place it on a trajectory towards Mars, tracking stations failed to find the probe in the expected transfer orbit. When the craft was located several hours later, it was still in its initial parking orbit, indicating a failure of the planned engine burn. While official sources of information on the status of the craft were as quiet as the spacecraft itself, contact with Phobos Grunt was eventually made by a 15-metre European Space Agency tracking station located 20 kilometres north of Perth in Western Australia. At 20:25 GMT on November the 22nd, a small secondary antenna bolted to the side of the 15-metre dish was used to send a weak radio signal towards the craft, commanding it to switch on its transmitter. Over the following week, several further communication sessions took place, and the received telemetry was passed to the Russian Space Agency for analysis. While efforts continued to communicate with the craft and diagnose the nature of the fault, the window for sending the spacecraft on its way to Phobos closed on November the 21st. If ground controllers are able to gain full control of the craft, it may be possible to retask it to another target, or at least to boost it to a higher orbit to avoid it re-entering the atmosphere. With 7.5 tons of propellant on board, if it does burn up in the atmosphere, very little debris is expected to reach the ground. The second Mars-bound craft was the Mars Science Laboratory, a NASA mission designed to explore Gale Crater near the equator of the Red Planet. Launched on November the 26th at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the spacecraft carries on board the Curiosity rover, the latest of a series of ground-based missions of the planet and the largest to date. At 3 metres in length, Curiosity is twice as long and 5 times as heavy as the twin Mars exploration rovers Spirit and Opportunity, launched in 2003. While it inherits many design features from previous missions, Curiosity contains many new experiments, including equipment for onboard analysis of rock samples, including a gas chromatograph, a mass spectrometer, and a tunable laser spectrometer, which will be able to identify a wide range of organic compounds and determine the ratios of different isotopes of key elements. These isotope ratios are clues to understanding the history of Mars's atmosphere and water. On arrival at Mars in August 2012, the rover will begin its journey at the bottom of Gale Crater, one of the deepest depressions on Mars and a geologically fascinating place. As it goes, it will cross many layers of rock, including what may be an alluvial fan, a spread of sediment left by fluid flowing down the crater wall. Over the course of the mission, the rover will investigate old rock on the crater floor before moving upwards towards the crater's central peak, tracing the history of the planet's surface across more than a billion years as it goes. The mission is initially funded for 2 years of operation on the Martian surface, although with its onboard nuclear-powered battery, it could function for much longer.